The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone, and welcome to That's a Laugh. I'm Jennifer Green with the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Thank you for joining me for the next half hour of funny stories, quotes, and other anecdotes that we hope will add a few chuckles to your day. Are you from the younger generation? Are you from the older generation? Are you somewhere in between? Are you not even really sure which generation you're in? Well, don't worry. This month's episode is all about generations, with advice and stories that every generation can benefit from. Our stories today are told by celebrity comedians. First, we'll hear how Annabelle Gurwitch tried to bond with her son through the power of music. Next, Mindy Kaling offers advice to the younger generation about the right way to experience success in school and beyond. And then, Whoopi Goldberg helps parents help their young ones by reminding them all that it's okay to actually do things. It seems like there's so much talk about the difference between generations, lovingly known as the generation gap. But what is a generation gap exactly? Well, Bernard Rosenberg helpfully defined the term for us in his book from 1972, Dictionary for the Disenchanted. Generation gap, a chasm, amorphously situated in time and space, that separates those who have grown up absurd from those who will, with luck, grow up absurd. That definition just might apply to our first story, an excerpt from Annabelle Gurwitch's book, I See You Made an Effort, Compliments, Indignities, and Survival Stories from the Edge of 50, published in 2014. She reminisces about the first concert she attended with her son from the chapter Ka-ching or Cha-ching, subtitled Dear God, Is It Ka-ching or Cha-ching? You're so omniscient, you decide. I am no longer allowed to sing in front of my son. I can't ask questions about school, no queries about girls, can't look too proud or enthusiastic at ball games, and all public displays of affection are, of course, verboten. Must sit separately when taking him to the movies with his friends. Must never be nude within 100 feet of him, even if doors are closed. Can't allow a sigh to pass my lips. Too old. An oi is forbidden. Too Jewish. Can't make a loud sound in an enclosed space, even if a shelf falls on my head. It's all come down to starchy foods. I've been dragging myself out of bed every morning to get breakfast ready, just so I can watch him eat the Aunt Jemima brand pancakes I've mixed from scratch. But now he hates my pancakes. I chew too loudly, the timbre of my voice is grating, and he'd prefer to eat alone. Our sole discussion of any length in the past few months took place over the course of an 8-hour car ride down the California coast, during which time we debated whether the proper pronunciation was ka-ching or cha-ching when mimicking a cash register sound. This went on for 6.5 hours. The remaining hour and a half he was asleep, and although unconscious, he still managed to communicate his disdain through hostile body language. Footnote. Urban Dictionary says both ka-ching and cha-ching, my son's preferred pronunciation, are cash register sounds. For the record, ka-ching has over 4 million more Google hits than cha-ching. Ka-ching, baby! The downhill slide began last year. I was instructed not to make eye contact with him on his middle school campus. Doing my best to walk while staring at my feet was difficult enough, but I once made the unforgivable mistake of waving hello, a gesture that was deemed way too enthusiastic. It caused so much distress, I could only surmise it was the teenage equivalent of waterboarding. After that, I was instructed not to leave my car. Instead, I was to text him when I was in his immediate vicinity. There was an occasion, however, when I was forced to address him in front of a girl who may or may not have been his girlfriend, and I cavalierly mentioned his adorable freckles. A teenage boy's appearance is a very, very bad and inappropriate topic for his mother. There is zero tolerance in this arena for teenagers. You might inadvertently use the adjective cute when handsome is the desired effect, or vice versa. I suggest treading carefully. On top of that, entering the immediate space of a teenager subjects your own appearance to a scrutiny I doubt Anna Wintour could withstand. It's hard enough to please myself, but a teenager's prohibitions include: do not wear any outfit that could be construed as either trying too hard, not trying hard enough, or classified simply as trying. Tonight, however, my stock will go up. I'm sure of it. I have scored something that no teenager who plays the electric bass can resist: an invitation to a private concert of a well-known indie band. But we're late as usual, Mom. Why can't you remember where your keys are? And we're rushing to get out of the house. Where are my keys? Good question. I started losing track of them 5 years ago and gave up, because I'd rather use my remaining brain cells to scour my memory for movie titles, obscure sitcom actors, and names of the spouses of old friends. I'll catch myself punching the air with a triumphant yes when my brain has successfully located this mostly useless information. When recalling the theme song from Laverne and Shirley is a cause for celebration, your keys are really the least of your problems. But I don't tell my son that. I just repeat what has become my catchphrase: I'm doing the best I can, and continue rooting around the kitchen. And this concert better be great, Mom. Oh, it will be. I guarantee it, I reply as we exit the house aided by a spare set of keys. I have promised him something extraordinary so I can spend 2 hours in his company. If all goes as planned, he will realize that I am a great mother, or at least that everything I do, have done, and will do in the future comes from having his best interests at heart. I hope I can deliver. I blame this entire enterprise on biology. My friends with older kids love to regale me with tales of how things will turn around. Your kid will eventually realize your worth, and you'll find yourself having a ball with him, they assure me. But most of them had kids when they were younger than I was. I had to do theater in nowhere near Broadway theaters in my 20s, instead of having children, like nature intended. And now I'm paying the unexpected price of going through menopause while my son is going through puberty. I don't have the luxury of waiting for my son to grow up and say, "Now I get it, Mom." I had him at 37. If my kid follows my lead, I'm going to have little ambulatory time to enjoy his appreciation. Tonight, damn it, he will see I am just a little bit cool, even if he hates me for it. Footnote: suggesting to him that teenage pregnancy isn't the worst thing that could happen is probably one of the most egregious age-related parenting faux pas I've committed to date. The idea that a concert could bring us together seems perfect. We regularly listen to music on our computers and the iPods scattered around our house. Or so I thought, until I saw his list of favorite bands on his Facebook page: The Antlers, Deerhoof, and Deer Hunter. I had never heard of any of them. What is it with all the venison-themed bands? Clearly the window was closing. What exactly is this we're going to, Mom? Do you even know? I'm not sure, I lie. Oh, I know. I do. I have planned this outing for 2 weeks now, but I must withhold details, because the more he knows, the easier it will be for him to reject the experience. My friend Heidi's 15-year-old daughter, Eloise, produces a local live music series, which has gained a national following on the web, will be a part of a small group who has been invited to a taping. When I was 16, I saw Jethro Tull play at the Hollywood, Florida Sportatorium with a group of girlfriends. It was the first rock concert I attended, and maybe it was the strobe lighting and smoke effects, seeing the only rock band led by a flutist, or that someone puked on my tan suede cork ease, but it was unforgettable. This will be my son's first concert, and he is going with me. His mother. If there is any generational marker of difference, this surely must be it. Our destination turns out to be a cramped loft in Hollywood. It's hot, and the place is packed with teenagers sprawled on sectional couches in front of a small stage where the indie punk band Titus Andronicus is warming up. We find two empty folding chairs on a riser, one level up from the couches, where the other parental-looking people are seated, as the two web VJ hosts take their place in front of the stage. My son inches his chair away from mine and stares straight ahead, careful not to look in my direction. He's younger than these teenagers, but I sense he wants to blend in with them, so it is not without trepidation that I whisper, "Take off your baseball cap." I want the girls to see his beautiful face, but he won't do it. And I know I can't push him. After half an hour, when he finally relents and takes off the cap, I gesture to him with a triumphant raise of an eyebrow, but he lets me know that his decision had nothing to do with my suggestion, mouthing a silent, "What?" the staple of the teenage male vocabulary. As the hosts move into place, I can tell they are not 15 years old, but hired guns that appear to be in their early 20s. The band is bursting with youthful energy. The lead singer, Patrick, is emaciated, with a rangy beard and mischievous eyes. He radiates an intensity just menacing enough to suggest he could easily be cast in the TV movie Charles Manson, The Early Years. In yet another unmistakable mark of aging, I notice how damn loud it is. But not a single other parent is making a stink about it. Is it possible that they have each come with the same intention as me? I resolve not to be a killjoy and concentrate instead on struggling to understand the lyrics. Yet another challenge that marks me as an oldster. I'm annoyed. Patrick said this album. He said album. Weaves together a tapestry of historical artifacts, including Civil War battle cries and Bruce Springsteen, with current events. Wow. Patrick not only has ambitious music goals, but he just referred to someone I regularly listen to as an artifact. I'm both incensed and intrigued, but it's futile. Can't understand a word. Eloise and the teens in the audience know all the lyrics and are singing along. Patrick addresses the crowd. He speaks of the horror of war, which he learned about firsthand by viewing YouTube videos posted by musicians singing about war experiences they've read about on blogs written by poets in Red Hook. He tells the crowd he hopes that one of them will be able to change the world. He's not addressing me or the other parents. Why would he? I'm just someone's mom, whom they might register only if I was standing over them and my hair were on fire, and then probably only to text PLOSWHOF, parent looking over shoulder with hair on fire, LOL. The band starts to pack up their gear, and the teenagers stand and casually begin to file out. I find it thrilling to be up close and personal with professional musicians, but this is the internet generation, who take personal contact with the celebrated so much in stride that they have compressed the space between themselves and the band. This may explain why it is so hard to get them to fork over money for music. It's that old adage about familiarity breeding contempt playing out in its digital incarnation. As we depart, I ask, "Did you like it?" But I have made the mistake of expressing too much excitement and am met with stony silence for the ride home. Titus Andronicus. What was I thinking? I studied the play in college. It's the punk Shakespearean drama in which the queen of the Goths eats her sons in a pie. I've taken my only child to see a band named after this most tragic tale of motherhood. If he ever makes the connection, it could be the subject of a therapy session, if not another entry in the ledger I expect he's keeping, dedicated to the many ways I am failing at parenting. Okay, so there may be some differences between older and younger generations, but there are definitely similarities. QuoteGarden.com contains quotes that address that very fact, such as this quote, author unknown, from circa 1944. The older generation thought nothing of getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and the younger generation doesn't think so much of it either. And speaking of younger generations, our next story is advice to those still in school, from Mindy Kaling's book, Is Everyone Hanging Out Without Me? And Other Concerns, published in 2011. The chapter is titled, Don't Peak in High School. Sometimes teenage girls ask me for advice about what they should be doing if they want a career like mine one day. There are basically two ways to get where I am. One, learn a provocative dance and put it on YouTube. Two, convince your parents to move to Orlando and homeschool you until you get cast on a kids show. Or do what I did, which is three, stay in school and be a respectful and hardworking wallflower and go to an accredited non-online university. Teenage girls, please don't worry about being super popular in high school or being the best actress in high school or the best athlete. Not only do people not care about any of that the second you graduate, but when you get older, if you reference your successes in high school too much, it actually makes you look kind of pitiful, like some babbling old Tennessee Williams character with nothing else going on in her current life. What I've noticed is that almost no one who was a big star in high school is also a big star later in life. For us overlooked kids, it's so wonderfully fair. I was never the lead in the play. I don't think I went to a single party with alcohol at it. No one offered me pot. It wasn't until I was 16 that I even knew marijuana and pot were the same thing. I didn't even learn this from a cool friend. I gleaned it from a syndicated episode of 21 Jump Street. My parents didn't let me do social things on weeknights because weeknights were for homework and maybe an episode of The X-Files if I was being a good kid. X-Files was on Friday night. And on extremely rare occasions, I could watch Seinfeld Thursday night, a school night, if I had just aced my PSATs or something. It is easy to freak out as a sensitive teenager. I always felt I was missing out because of the way the high school experience was dramatized in television and song. For every realistic, my so-called life, there were 10 90210s or party of fives where a 20-something like Luke Perry was supposed to be just a typical guy at your high school. If Luke Perry had gone to my high school, everyone would have thought, what's the deal with this brooding greaser? Is he a narc? But that's who Hollywood put forth as just a dude at your high school. In the genre of making you feel like you're not having an awesome American high school experience, the worst offender is actually a song. John Cougar Mellencamp's Jack and Diane. It's one of those songs, like Eric Clapton's Tears in Heaven, that everyone knows all the words to without ever having chosen to learn them. I've seen people get incredibly pumped when this song comes on. I once witnessed a couple request it four times in a row at Johnny Rockets and belt it out loud while clapping their hands above their heads, so apparently it is an anthem of some people's youth. I think across America, as I type this, there are high school couples who strive to be like Jack and Diane from that song. Just hanging out after school, making out at the Tasty Freeze, sneaking beers into their cars without a care in the world. Just two popular, idle, all-American, white kids having a blast. The world created in Jack and Diane is maybe okay charming because, like, all right, that kid Jack is going to get shipped off to Vietnam and there was going to be a whole part two of the story when he returned as some traumatized, disillusioned vet. The song is only interesting to me as the dreamy first act to a much more interesting Born on the 4th of July type story. As it is, I guess I find Jack and Diane a little disgusting. As a child of immigrant professionals, I can't help but notice the wasteful frivolity of it all. Why are these kids not home doing their homework? Why aren't they setting the table for dinner or helping out around the house? Who allows their kids to hang out in parking lots? Isn't that loitering? I wish there was a song called Wind and Airy, a little ditty about a hard-working Vietnamese girl who helps her parents with the franchised Holiday Inn they run and does homework in the lobby, and Airy, a hard-working Jewish boy who does volunteer work at his grandmother's old-age home, and they meet after school at Princeton Review. They help each other study for the SATs and different AP courses, and then, after months of studying and mountains of flashcards, they kiss chastely upon hearing the news that they both got into their top college choices. This is a song teens need to inadvertently memorize. Now that's a song I'd request at Johnny Rockets. In high school, I had fun in my academic clubs, watching movies with my girlfriends, learning Latin, having long, protracted, unrequited crushes on older guys who didn't know me, and yes, hanging out with my family. I liked hanging out with my family. Later, when you're grown up, you realize you never get to hang out with your family. You pretty much have only 18 years to spend with them full time, and that's it. So, yeah. It all added up to a happy, memorable time, even though I was never a star. Because I was largely overlooked at school, I watched everyone like an observant weirdo. And not unlike Eugene Levy's character, Dr. Alan Pearl in Waiting for Guffman, who sat next to the class clown and studied him. But I did that with everyone. It has helped me so much as a writer. You have no idea. I just want ambitious teenagers to know it's totally fine to be quiet, observant kids. Besides being a delight to your parents, you will find you have plenty of time later to catch up. So many people I work with, famous actors, accomplished writers, were overlooked in high school. Be like Alan Pearl. Sit next to the class clown and study him. Then grow up, take everything you learned, and get paid to be a real-life clown, unlike whatever unexciting thing the actual high school class clown is doing now. The chorus of Jack and Diane is, "Oh yeah, life goes on, long after the thrill of living is gone." Are you kidding me? The thrill of living was in high school? Come on, Mr. Cougar Mellencamp. Get a life. Mindy Kaling isn't the only one who appreciates the younger generations. Dave Barry offers these words, which can be found on azquotes.com, about how he feels toward the younger crowd. "I care about our young people, and I wish them great success, because they are our hope for the future, and someday, when my generation retires, they will have to pay us trillions of dollars in Social Security." But how do children go from school students to successful adults? Whoopi Goldberg has the answer in her book, Is It Just Me or Is It Nuts Out There?, published in 2010. From chapter 41, Encourage Your Kids to Play by Themselves. Somebody sent me this wonderful thing for my birthday, an observation about the differences between generations. One of them said if you were born between 1930 and 1969, you grew up going outside and staying out from 8 o'clock in the morning in the summertime until 5 o'clock. And no one was freaked out that you weren't home. Nobody. That's true. We all did things because our parents demanded that we go outside and socialize. Get out and play. You had to do it. And you know what happened? You learned how to make friends. You learned how to navigate, well, life. For some reason, children now are not taught how to be independent. As a kid, because I had to go out and play, I knew the outside world. This generation knows a computer screen. They don't seem to know they can go outside. There's a generation of parents now who hardly get to see who their kids are friends with because they don't come to your home. They're all on the computer. You have to take your kids' word for it that they're even real people. We had imaginary friends. Theirs are virtual. So there are certain aspects of all of this that are really hard for me and a lot of people to understand. And somehow, folks younger than me, parents that are younger than me, don't seem to remember the days of having to go outside and play. The days when you got out there and met people and dealt with the world. You know, back when you went to the library. The what? Yeah, and not the library that was a folder on your computer's desktop. The library that was a place. The library where you had to interact with the librarian. You had to learn how to ask questions. You had to wait your turn. You had to learn how to navigate where you were. You learned how to do by doing it, by getting out there and having to do the work in person. It's just a very different time now. Many parents don't understand what their kids are studying in school. So there isn't a way to engage because the adults don't follow what the kids are doing. You can't be as involved as you would like if you don't understand it yourself. So that connection is fading. Mom, can you help me with my homework? Is a rarity now. They don't really need you as much anyway, because they can go on the frickin' computer and figure it all out. Technology seems to have helped them be able to learn everything independently, except how to be independent people like we had to be. Computers have made it easy for them in one way, but you know what? They have also made it tougher because doing everything online has robbed them of experiences. It's why it's important for parents to say things like please and thank you and may I, and to talk about what's in the news and what's happening in the world, and to travel and spend time out there. Yes, out there. It's why it's important that kids learn about having friends, so that if they do go to somebody's house, they know how to speak to the parents, how to interact with actual people, maybe even how to tell time when it's not digital. Before we wrap up our show today, I leave you with this quote found on quotegarden.com, author unknown. There is nothing wrong with today's teenager that 20 years won't cure. And that's our time for today. We thank you so much for listening. I'm Jennifer Green with the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Join me again next month for That's a Laugh. I'll be back on the fourth Tuesday of every month, and I hope you'll listen again next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. Just click on the podcast link under the listen bar at the top of the homepage. And remember, you can now listen to TRRS on Amazon Echo. Simply say, Alexa, play Triangle Reading Service. Play Triangle Radio Reading Service, and you will hear broadcasts instantly. Are you enjoying the show? Do you have any amusing anecdotes or quotes you'd like to share? We'd love to hear from you. Please go to our website and call us, or call us with questions, requests, or other comments about this or any of our programs at 919-832-5138. That number, one more time, is 919-832-5138.